Hey everyone, it's Adria.
And I'm Brooke.
So do you want to do I'm Adria and I'm Brooke, or it's Adria?
I can't. Oh my god.
I think that happened last time too, and I was like, oh, she said I'm Brooke. And I said it's Adria, and it sounds weird. What do you think?
I like I'm versus it's.
Okay. Oh.
Because I feel like it's weird to say it the second. I feel like it's weird for you to say it's Adria, and I'm like, it's bro. I think that sounds weird.
Okay. All right.
Well, okay, let's go so again.
Start again. All right. Hey, everyone. I'm Adria.
And I'm Brooke.
And this is What Have You Done?
Get there one day.
Yep. One day it'll go smooth.
Probably not.
How's it going?
Good. How are you? It's been probably what, like 2 weeks, week and a half ish since we last recorded? I don't even remember. Yes. There is no time.
Yep. There is no time. I do know it's earlier than we planned, so that's nice.
Right. Because we know ourselves and we need to stay ahead of schedule as much as possible because we will definitely get behind if we let ourselves.
So far, third episode back, we're nailing it.
We're still on schedule. Yeah.
Yeah. So far. I won't jinx it. Knock on wood.
Have you done anything exciting or interesting, or has anything interesting happened in the last week or two for you?
No, I mean, it's been fucking hot as hell.
Yeah. It's pretty miserable.
Yeah, I don't know if it's isolated to the Northeast right now, but every morning my Alexa announces, like, what the temperature is going to be and everything. And today it was, like, a high of 91. Feels like 100 degrees. I was like, why?
Does it do that? When, like, how does it know to tell you that?
So, I guess I said it. I don't know, because just one day at 7 o'clock in the morning, it just randomly came on and said, good morning, the temperature, and now every day at 7, it does it. So I don't know if I said yes to something that, like, set it up or whatever. Because sometimes I'll go, oh, hey, what's the weather today? And she'll ask, like, do you want me to give you this information every morning? So I wonder if at some point I said, yeah, sure, but it surprised me when it happened the first time, because I was like, whoa, she's just talking, and I was asleep, so
I don't know. That makes sense. I don't have any of those devices, so I don't know how they work, but
yeah,
I feel like if I had
I'm pretty
one of those,
sure it just listens to you 24/7
probably.
Yeah,
right. It like hears you take your first like deep breath of the morning, and it's like the weather.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. We mostly have it to play, like white noise or something at night. We're like little newborn babies that need little machines in the background, because we have the fan and then we have the, whatever you've been listening to, brown noise. We've been listening to brown noise lately.
Brown noise doesn't sound very appealing.
It's actually very calming. Like, if you just kind of, I don't know if you've ever, a trick that I have to fall asleep is I'll close my eyes and just try and make it, like, completely black on the inside. Like, don't think of anything, just focus on a sound in the room. And the brown noise kind of helps with, like, I fall asleep so fast just focusing on that. It's almost like, you know how there's white noise?
Yeah.
What were you going to ask? Sorry. I thought that's
what do you mean by get it completely black? Is it not black when you shut your eyes?
Well, if you're thinking of stuff, it's not, right? Aren't you picturing stuff, or is it just black?
Yeah, but I can't see it. It's still black. can you see a picture if you're close your eyes and think of it? You can visually, like, you're looking at it in person?
Yeah. Can you not? I know that there's people that can't. That's why I'm asking.
No, I can't.
So if you closed your eyes and I was like, picture an apple sitting on a picnic bench, can you not see that scene in front of you?
Not with my eyeballs.
With what?
I don't know.
if you see it, right?
I guess, but if I was looking at a table with an apple on it, I shut my eyes. I can't see that with my eyes.
No, that's, yeah, that's what I mean. That's not what I mean, I guess. Now I get what you're saying.
Like, I can get myself to, like, fuzzily picture it in my head, but.
Yeah, obviously I'm not, like, seeing stuff, but, yeah, picturing it, that's, like, kind of the same thing. I just try not to think of anything. Like, I just, when I say black, I mean no thoughts whatsoever. The only thought is the sound. I'm trying to just listen to the sound in the room.
That's very hard to achieve. I have a very hard time falling asleep because I constantly think about absolute nonsense.
Mm-hmm. But I taught Mason that, my son, a couple years ago, and he said, like, that's the thing that works the best to fall, like, when you can't fall asleep, to start making you sleepy.
Is what?
Is to close your eyes and just really only try and listen to one sound in the room. You should try it. Like, if you have a fan on, just close your eyes and just, if you start thinking of something, go, nope, fan in the room. Fan in the room, you know? And just listen to the sound.
If you do that, do you ever start hearing, like, weird things that you know aren't actually, like, there?
Sometimes, and I think it's because my dreams are starting to activate. That's at least what I tell myself. Is that the brain starting to...
There's not somebody in the room, I'm just dreaming.
No. I've definitely had that with the sleep paralysis, but not, like, just at little moments trying to fall asleep.
Huh.
Do you?
Sometimes. And sometimes it freaks me out, and then I just get back into the spiral of, like, thinking about other things.
And then it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and you're finally falling asleep.
Yeah, it's 1 a.m., and I'm like, cool, I have to work in a few hours, and I can't stop thinking about the potential monster that's in the closet. I don't know.
Right.
Or, like, somebody broke in. I can faintly hear that somebody's in the living room. Nothing's in the living room. It's just my brain.
I can see that, like, in your position. When I used to live by myself, sometimes I would be like, is someone trying the doorknob?
Mm-hmm.
Is someone, like, I could hear people moving in the hallway. I'm like, are they stopped in front of my door? Like, I used to think about that all the time.
Yeah. No, I definitely get that.
Is anything new happening with you?
Not really. I got to see Gidge the other day, 2 days in a row, and I missed her.
Oh, yeah.
And her mouth smells like hot trash, but I still let her kiss my face because I love her.
Aw, she's so cute.
She's the best little dog, isn't she?
Mm-hmm. She was there today, too.
Oh. I think it's been so hot out, I think. It's cooler at work.
Yeah, definitely. That's why, I've been making sure my princess dog eats before she comes in so I can bring her to work. It's cool in the house, but I think it's better at work.
I forgot to tell you that we have a little moss ball now. Do you know what those are?
Do they go in water?
Mm-hmm.
Like, submerged? I think so. I think when I worked at the pet store, that we sold moss balls. They get big, right?
They can. We have a teeny one. It's in, like, this tiny, tiny little, like, what you'd put, like, a message in a bottle in with, like, a little cork on top. It's teeny. It has little rocks in it, and you're supposed to tumble it so it stays round. But Katie named it Mosby, and she's been wanting me to tell you.
Aw, that's cute. Mosby the moss ball.
And I was like, oh, like, after Adrian's dog Mosby, and she was like, no, like, Mosby Dick, and I was like,
Mosby Dick.
That's not correct.
She's She's wicked funny.
The shit that comes out of her mouth is almost like the shit that comes out of your mouth.
I know. Most be dick. And that's so funny.
I was like, you're the one that reads books around here. But.
It's her own little... Well, I guess either one doesn't really make sense, right? I don't know. Like, what's Moby?
Yeah. Oh. Right. Remember it can be Moby Dick. I don't care.
Are you too young for Moby? The, I don't know what you would call him. The DJ? He's bald and used to make, like, when techno music was really big.
Yeah, I have no idea who that is.
No. If you... Yeah, you probably wouldn't see a picture, but he had, like, beef with Eminem at some point.
Hmm. Give me Doobie!
Okay.
What's that? Bye!
I'm not in the I'm not alone in the house for...
Oh, hi!
You want me in the podcast?
I just told her about Mosby the Moss Ball.
Mosby Dick.
Yep. It's...
So funny. Well, I guess we should tell everybody.
You viewers would love to watch me.
Okay, can you go take a shower, please?
You saying I smoke up?
Yes.
Hey.
Yes, we should say why we're here today. So loud. After, yeah, she's very loud. After 12 minutes of nonsense,
right? Literal nonsense. So today we are talking about good old Alaska, 49th state.
Alaska is so pretty. I would love to go there.
Oh, yeah. That's one of my dream vacations, is one of those Alaska cruises that goes through Canada and everything.
Mm-hmm.
My mother did that last year. So jealous of it.
Yeah.
Because they had a time. Yeah.
Did they like it?
It's so beautiful. Yeah, they loved it.
They loved it. I would definitely go there.
Yeah. And you know, my mother, she's always, everywhere she goes on vacation, she's like, I'm probably going to move there. Everywhere she goes. Like, she's been looking at property in, like, South Carolina, Aruba, Mexico.
Do you think she'd actually move?
No. I don't know. But she had said the same thing about Alaska. But at the same time, Alaska's kind of scary. Like, when you start thinking about how much land there is.
Yeah,
with nobody living in it.
Isn't it like, at some points, it's like light for 24 hours and then dark for 24 hours or like a span of like months? I don't know.
Yeah, it is like that. Yeah, it's most of the day. It'll be sunny for a while and then most of the day, dark. That's why I think there's a lot of, like, alcoholism is pretty prevalent there, like addiction in general, because I think people have a lot of like seasonal depressive.
I was gonna say, because it's depressing as fuck if it's just dark out all the time.
Mm-hmm. And cold most. Well, actually, I think it gets pretty warm there now, especially depending on where you are.
Yeah,
like,
probably.
I think a lot of Alaska isn't like cold in the summer.
What do you have? Did you find a crazy, weird, interesting news headline that happened in Alaska?
I sure did. Let me see. So, I have a story. Not sure the date on this one, but the headline is, an American woman said she was shocked to discover that Alaska isn't actually an island, calling for an overhaul of the school curriculum in the United States. Do you know what... why she would think it's an island?
Because on the map, it's like there's a little picture of it on the bottom corner next to Hawaii.
Right, yeah. And I don't think I ever thought it was an island, but then I was thinking about it and I was like, you know, I can see why someone would think that.
I can too. I remember...
especially because Hawaii is an island. It's the same way.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think I ever thought... it was, like, detached, but I didn't realize it was attached to Canada.
Yeah.
Because yeah, I was like, that's weird there. That there's a different country in between.
Yeah. And it's pretty, I mean, I think at some point it touches Russia, right?
Does it?
I think so. There's that show called Ice Road. Oh, no, I'm thinking of something different. Sorry. Have you ever heard of Ice Road Truckers?
No.
So it's a reality TV show. I think it's on Discovery. Real quick. This has nothing to do with the news story. But for like 3 months in Alaska, there's this one road that's possible to drive on because ice forms like over the water there. And they're able to drive across the ice to get food and stuff to remote areas of that, like, up in Alaska thing. But I don't think that's the part that touches Russia. I almost... Yeah. Oh. I'm almost positive that's not the part.
Oh, okay.
That was all for nothing, cool. I guess. It is okay. Yeah, it's a cool thing, though. It's supposed to be... It's a real dangerous thing, obviously, if they have the whole reality show about it.
Yeah, I'm not about standing on ice. I'm not about driving on ice. Not about it.
I did it once in Vermont. I drove onto Lake Champlain. I forget why we were in Vermont, but we were driving by, like, obviously over the water. I think we were going into Burlington, and we saw the bunch of trucks out there, people just ice fishing and stuff. I was like, you think that we could drive onto the ice? It was actually really cool. We got out and we're standing and looking down and stuff. Scary, but cool.
Yeah, I don't think
that's a big ass lake to think that it would be that frozen, that people are just out there with trucks and.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, yeah. Back to the story here. A woman said she was shocked to discover that Alaska is not an island and that it's possible to drive to it during a conversation with her Canadian boyfriend. In the video, posted on October 26th, TikToker Sabrina Abreu asked people not to call her a stupid American, and she admitted her mistake. Stupid American.
Well, now I gotta see what she looks like.
Yeah. Everybody knows that Alaska is cold, she said. But did I know that it was connected by land? No, I didn't know that. She also said that she hadn't realized how big Alaska was just by looking at the map, and that she thought that Texas was bigger than Alaska. Which I guess Texas, I think, does look about, if not the same.
I was going to say, are they not similar in size?
I believe Alaska is a lot bigger. I think I read some sort of fact that Alaska, if you take its total land mass, is the size of Texas, California, and Montana combined. Like, that's how big Alaska is.
Alaska's way up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
It's pretty north. So let's see. Alaska is the largest U.S. state bordering the Canadian territory of Yukon and the westernmost province of British Columbia, which sits between the states and the rest of the U.S., as it is one of the U.S. non-contiguous states, along with Hawaii, it's often shown separately in a box at the bottom of maps of the U.S., which could lead some people to assume it's not part of the same landmass. Abreu explained that this was the reason for her confusion, saying the curriculum obviously needs some help. We need a good revision, as an overhaul of the entire curriculum at this point. So,
how old is this lady that said this? Do we know?
Let's see. It hasn't given her age yet.
Because she sounds young.
Yes, that does sound like a very young thing. But you never know. Remember, I didn't find out unicorns weren't real animals until I was in my 20s.
Yeah, well, you're an exception to the rule.
There are things in this world that you just believe or tell yourself because no one ever told you the truth.
Well, somebody should have told poor little Adria that unicorns aren't actually real.
Yeah. Someone. Someone. Before I announced it to people out loud and they realized how much of an idiot I am.
That makes it the best. That's the best way to reveal that information.
So the article continues. So far, the video has been viewed over 819,000 times. Many viewers said they were Canadian appeared baffled by her revelation. Other viewers who said they were American wrote that they had made the same mistake. TikTok viewer Haley Hopkins commented, "That video had just made her realize that Alaska is not an island. I'm so embarrassed," she wrote. Meanwhile, a viewer who said they're a teacher wrote that they had heard this from adults many times and that they always made sure to tell their students that Alaska is not an island.
I bet you the number of people that don't know that is pretty high.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, like, definitely. I could definitely see that.
Right.
Because if it was never like, clarified.
Right. And as much as we're like, damn, like, those people are dumb, how many people are probably like, oh.
Okay. And I mean, then the article just kind of continues with some facts about like show. Oh, it mentions Ice Road Truckers. It says there's many misconceptions about Alaska. Business Insider reports, partly due to its representation in pop culture, as TV shows such as Ice Road Truckers, Deadliest Catch, and Alaskan Bush People depict some of the most extreme jobs that people do in the state. This may lead people to believe that Alaska is freezing cold and snowing all the time, with polar bears roaming in the street. In fact, temperatures can reach up to 70 degrees Fahrenheit in the summer. While grizzly bears and black bears are relatively common in the state, polar bears can typically only be seen on the state's Arctic coastline, so close to the pole. Have you seen any of those shows that they mentioned there?
No.
No. Deadliest Catch is good. It follows king crab fishermen.
So that I've seen a very long time ago.
Oh, okay. It's still going.
My Pepe used to watch it, and he probably still watches it, but when I would be there when I was younger. So I used to watch it with him.
Aww.
That's intense. Being on a ship like that? No, thank you.
Oh, no. Sometimes they show, like, long shots of how big the waves are ebbing and, like, going up and down behind the boat. I'm like, okay, no. Like, it really, you realize how easily that water can just swallow you up.
No problem. Yeah. I definitely have, like, I'm not scared of much, but there's something in this combines with the whole, like, being on ice thing. I don't like water. I don't like open water. Like, there's something about... And it's not heights. Like, I wouldn't jump off a cliff into water, but it's not being up on the cliff that freaks me out. It's jumping into the water, and it's the thought of ice cracking and falling into the, like, I would just panic and drown anyway.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, the open water's scary.
And a wave just flipping your boat over, and then you're in the middle of the ocean. No, thank you. Nope.
Yeah. All set. And on that show, they show, like, the view of the rescue helicopters, because you could put on survival suits to float in the ocean so you don't get hypothermia, if you had time to put it on. But the helicopters can barely see you. It's going to be a lucky thing. And it's, like, a bright orange suit. And it's, like, you got to be lucky for them to be able to find you in a huge mass of ocean if there's a storm, you know? It's hard enough when the water's clear.
Yeah. No, thank you. All set with that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Alaska. Rascally, all right, you Alaska.
You have a story for us?
I do. I have a story.
What's this one about?
It's
like
about,
what kind of case is it?
This is about a murder that went unsolved for a little while.
Okay.
But is now solved. I'll give you the punchline now.
It's,
but
like, newly solved, or was this a while ago?
Newly solved.
Okay.
Yeah, so the crime itself happened in the 70s, and it was solved in the 2000s.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
So this is about a woman named Bonnie Craig. Bonnie Christine Craig was born March 30th, 1976 in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. So right next to Alaska there. Well, not right next to it, but close. She was born to Karen and Gordon Craig. They would divorce the next year, but Bonnie's mother remarried a man named Gary Campbell when Bonnie was three. He pretty much just became the father figure in her life from then on. Growing up, Bonnie had to learn how to fit in quickly, as her stepfather's job with the British Petroleum Company had them moving pretty often. She attended 6 elementary schools and 2 junior high schools before they settled down in Anchorage, Alaska, in her freshman year of high school, which she graduated in 1994.
That's gotta be rough. Changing schools like that?
I can't imagine that. Like, no. I've changed schools a few times, but not that. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Especially junior high is only a couple years, usually, right?
Yeah, yeah. To have 2. I can't imagine.
Oh, if she did 6 elementary schools, that means she pretty much moved every year.
Right.
Wow, that's insane.
I had enough trouble in school, and social anxiety, getting put into a new school, knowing nobody would have been my worst nightmare.
Oh, yeah. For sure. And I just realized a mistake I made. I told you this crime happened in the 70s. I was looking at the year that Bonnie was born. It happened in 1994.
Okay. I was going to ask that because I was like, is she a baby when this happened?
Right. No. Nope. This happened in 94. So I think that's 19, but I'll get to that. Bonnie was an overall good student and pleasant girl. She played both the violin and viola in her school's orchestra, and was a member of SAD, Students Against Drunk Driving. She was also on her school's wrestling and swim team, which is cool.
Hmm.
Yeah. I don't think a girl on the wrestling team. I can't imagine there was a women's wrestling team in high school. She must have had to join the guys' team.
Yeah, I can't imagine there would be.
Very progressive for the 90s. In September 1994, Bonnie began attending University of Alaska in Anchorage, so the same city that she lived in. While she had a job handing out samples at Sam's Club, it didn't really support her affording a car. Relatable. So she had to get up early to make the 2-mile walk to her bus stop in order to get to her classes. Which sounds terrible.
Yeah. I had a question, but I lost it.
It's about Sam's Club?
No, it was something you said before that. Oh. Did you say she lives in Anchorage?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, so she lives in the same town as the college. On the morning of September 28th, 1994, Bonnie left her home at about 5 a.m., to make it to her 7 a.m. English class. But she never arrived that day, unfortunately.
That's early.
Oh, super early. Her parents remained unaware that her daughter was missing until her body was found around 2:30 that afternoon, floating in the McHugh Creek, which is about 10 miles from her bus stop. So she's gone. Yeah.
Okay, so she was found the same day she disappeared.
She was found the same day. Thankfully.
Not even 12 hours later.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes.
And that's with nobody knowing that she was missing, too. Like, it was that out in the open.
Right, they didn't even realize she was missing before they found her body.
Right.
Okay.
The medical examiner's report initially named her cause of death as drowning, but she also received multiple head wounds that were reported to be consistent with a fall from a cliff. From the beginning, the Alaska state troopers believed that Bonnie had been involved in a hiking accident.
I'm assuming there was no hike between her house and her bus stop.
Yeah. So her mother had a really hard time. Her mother's name's Karen. And Karen had a really hard time believing this theory for a few reasons. One, being the good student that she was, Bonnie would never decide to go for a random hike at 5 a.m. on a school day. Being 10 miles away from the bus stop, how did Bonnie get there? Was it to be believed that she had walked the entire way there at 5 a.m.?
Yeah, that's far. So it was 10 miles from the bus stop, so like 12 miles from the house-ish?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. None of her belongings that she had brought to school with her that day were ever found. Ever.
Wow.
And when viewing her daughter's body, she noticed that she had what looked like defensive wounds on her hands, too.
Okay.
It was unknown why the police were so hesitant to look into Bonnie's fate more, but Karen suspected that they just didn't want to put in the time that's required, which I feel like we hear a lot in stories.
Yeah.
Is that the police will be like, oh, suicide, oh, she must have been hiking, and then that's it.
Right, yeah. She was hiking and now is in a body of water when she was going to school.
Right, yep. 6 months after her daughter's death, Karen decided to take matters into her own hands after discovering in her daughter's autopsy report that even after the police stated that they found no evidence that Bonnie was raped, there were traces of semen found inside of her.
Okay.
So that's pretty big evidence there. Another reason that Karen was skeptical that this may have been an accident was due to the fact that she had done some work as an undercover police informant for the Anchorage Police Department. This is Karen, the mother. An unnamed informant told Karen that her family may have been targeted by a drug lord after a sting that she was involved in, resulting in multiple people in his organization being arrested. So there's drama there with Karen.
Okay.
He also claimed that Bonnie's murder was a message to the police department to back off. According to Karen, she was murdered the day after the police... She was murdered the day... Hold on. According to Karen, she was murdered the day after the people she identified were released from jail. Despite the precautions that were taken to protect her identity during the bus, it would not have been difficult for the accused to learn who had fingered them. Or fingered them. I don't even know how to say that. Who had fingered... Stop saying it.
What are you trying to say? Is that the word?
That must have been something I copied. Fingered them, I think, is like a term saying like you pointed the finger at them. Like who pointed them out.
Okay. Well... Maybe change that wording, but...
Yeah. it would have been difficult to... I can't. So, anyway, Karen was again frustrated when she met one of the lead investigators. I'm sorry. Hold on. This must have been a point where I stopped... it definitely is a part where I stopped double-spacing. Karen was again frustrated when she met with one of the lead investigators. When she told him about the information she received, he repeatedly asked her for the identity of her source. However, investigators did not follow up on her lead. They claimed that they looked into the leads that she had gave them over the years, and that they merely have not shared all of the information of this case. 1 year later, one of Bonnie's professors contacted Karen. She became suspicious of one of her students, suspecting that he may have been involved in Bonnie's murder. According to the professor, he made several references to the day of it in his journal, claiming that it would be a very tough day and that he would be put to the test that day. According to Karen, some of his writings were also violent. The professor claimed that the student was late for school the day that Bonnie got murdered, and when he came to class, she noticed that he was wet, like he had just gotten out of the shower.
Uh-oh.
I know.
And I'm sorry, who is this? This is just a student of Bonnie's teacher?
Yes. Yep, and the teacher went to the mother about a questionable thing she witnessed.
Did she give the name of the kid to Bonnie's mom?
I'm assuming she did. It doesn't mention it in any of the things, maybe. Well, he's and obviously not a minor now, but...
She didn't recognize it, the name?
No. Nope. Okay. Just getting out of the shower. She also said it smelled like he had poured a whole bottle of cologne on himself. After Bonnie's murder, his writings were more peaceful. However, DNA evidence and an alibi ruled him out of this case. So, it definitely wasn't him. No. Okay. Karen believes that if another person was involved, the DNA didn't have to belong to him. She also uncovered that he had an assault charge against him that had been bailed out by a friend who was involved in another murder in September of 97. At that time, troopers finally acknowledged publicly that Bonnie had been raped and beaten before her death. They believed that she was either thrown over the cliff or fell while escaping her attacker or attackers. So now the police are finally admitting that it wasn't an accident and that it wasn't her going for a random hike that morning. Like, something actually happened.
So there was a cliff, though?
Yes, there was a cliff.
Okay.
Because I think at first it was... They thought that she had maybe fallen from the cliff while she was hiking. I don't know. Troopers then tried to find witnesses who may have seen something the last morning that Bonnie was alive. A neighbor reported seeing her walking down the street around 5:20 a.m. Excuse me. Another witness saw her at the bus stop 1 hour later. And another neighbor saw her car idling in front of her home that morning. Finally, an anonymous caller to the police Crime Stoppers line claimed to have seen her at the bus stop, talking to two men in a car. Despite this, they did not have any evidence to arrest anyone in connection with this case. So a lot of, like, little leads, but no one really saw anything.
Hmm.
Yeah. After hitting multiple dead ends, Bonnie's case went cold until 2006. So 12 years. With the advancements of DNA testing, the semen sample found in Bonnie's case was entered into the National CODIS system, which is the system that if you've committed a crime, I believe a felony in the U.S., you have to submit your DNA to a database, and CODIS is that. And when they submitted it, a match came up. In November 2006, so... Yep, 12 years after her murder, it was matched to a 36-year-old man named Kenneth Dion. He was a prisoner in New Hampshire for a series of armed robberies when the match was made. Like I said in our last episode, everything leads back to New Hampshire.
Is that just coincidence?
Yes. Found this one after, and I was like, of course he was in New Hampshire.
Nothing happens in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm. Right. At the time of her murder, he lived in the area, was on probation for robbery, and had been released from Alaska prison just a few months earlier. He had served time there on assault charges. So in May 2007, Dion was charged with Bonnie's rape and murder. It's believed that the crime was a random act of violence and that he picked her up while she was walking to the bus stop. Okay. At trial in May 2011, he claimed that he had consensual sex with her that morning and that she accidentally fell to her death while alone at the creek.
I'm sure.
Yeah. However, when first questioned, he claimed that he did not know her. Her family and friends didn't know her either. So they're like, that's bullshit because she didn't even know you and she's meeting you at 5 a.m. to do it in the woods next to a creek.
Yeah, no thank you. That's definitely not happening.
Even if I do know you, no thank you. He also could not account for his whereabouts on that day. his wife said that he was not home that entire week when she was questioned. Furthermore,
this dude's wife?
Yeah, Kenneth's wife. Furthermore, the medical examiner determined that Bonnie's injuries were caused by a blunt object or weapon, not from a fall. At the time, Dion carried martial arts weapons in his car, which could have inflicted the injuries. So I'm just picturing, like, throwing stars and nunchucks and stuff. Or nunchucks.
Psycho stuff, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, a leaf with her blood on it was found above the cliff area, suggesting that she was already injured before falling from it.
Wow, that's a hell of a thing to find.
Yes, very good evidence to find. Finally, her family noted that she was in a strict, committed relationship with her boyfriend at the time and would not have sex with someone else, especially a complete stranger. In that June 15th of 2011, Dion was found guilty for her rape and murder. And October 31st, he was sentenced to 124 years in prison, 99 for first-degree murder and 25 for first-degree sexual assault. And it was appealed in February of 2015, but the conviction was upheld. So he's going to be in jail for the rest of his life.
Damn. So as far as we know, that was his first murder.
Yeah. Yep. That's crazy. As far as we know, he had no other murders before that.
Damn.
Yeah. R.I.P. Bonnie. I feel bad. She sounded like a nice girl.
Right. That's, I mean, not that anybody expects anything random like that to ever happen, but...
Right. I guess even if she's not a nice girl, like, it's still really sad.
Yeah. No, of course. That's just...
Can't even walk to school.
Like, random stuff is so scary.
Mm-hmm. Can't even walk to school.
No. And that was 1994. You extra can't now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the only thing that's in, like... evolved from that is better cameras everywhere, but it's like it's still gonna happen. You'll just have a better picture of how it happened and what happened. And people are real brazen.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, well, there's I mean if you're a psycho anyway, like, you don't care, you have no rationale.
So what kind of story do you have for us this week for Alaska?
Okay, so I have one. I believe you will recognize the name, and it's a fairly well-known one, I think, for how intense his crimes were. I'm surprised it's not more well-known, but I am covering Robert Hansen today.
Ooh, I have heard that name before. I know he's a pretty infamous guy. I don't really remember all of the details about it, though.
And there's a lot to it, so I'm not surprised.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure. That was probably a big research.
Yeah, it definitely... I know, when I was like, into it, I was like, oh no, this is gonna be quite the project. But at the same time, I was like, I also can't stop now, because
right.
This guy's fucking insane, but...
Mm-hmm.
So I got a lot of the information from a documentary I watched called The Butcher Baker, Mind of a Monster.
The Butcher Baker?
Yeah. So he owned a bakery, and that's why they gave him that name. I don't know.
Oh.
This story is pretty rough. He did a lot of very crazy things and horrible things.
Ugh.
So just trigger warning for... sexual assault, murder, pretty much everything.
Gotcha.
Okay, so Robert Hansen was a serial killer who was born in Esterville, Iowa on February 15th, 1939. He committed his crimes in Anchorage, Alaska from the years of 1973 to 1983, which included the murder of at least 17 women and the rape of another 30 who survived. He was known to fly these women out into the Alaska wilderness and hunt them down.
Hunt? So,
yes.
Like with a...
with a gun.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yes. Scary.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely terrible. I meant to mention before I started, that I did my best with the research. A lot of things said different things. Nothing, like, major, but, like, the years were a little mixed up or...
Okay.
I don't know. But I tried to correct as much as I could. But it was nothing... Again, it was nothing major anyway, but...
Like, nothing that changes the story at all?
No, not really.
Got it.
So it was known that Hansen had a pretty rough childhood. Not only was his father not a great guy, Hansen had a lot of acne growing up and also had a stutter, so he was made fun of in school a lot. He got in trouble at school as well and got bad grades, so he just had a real rough time growing up.
Yeah.
His father was very strict and used to make Hansen work long hours in the bakery he owned, so his dad was a baker too.
Mm, family biz.
Right. It seemed like his father was always on him for something and nothing was ever enough, which resulted in Hansen feeling a lot of the pressure and resentment, feeling a lot of pressure and resentment for his father.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure a lot of hate too.
Right.
Between the treatment from his father and his struggles in school with bullying, it's often cited that those factors contributed to Hansen's later criminal behavior and psychological issues. His hate of women also began at a very early age. He was tall, lanky, had acne, was shy, you know, and he struggled with the stutter. So because women weren't all over him, he began to resent them.
Yeah, yes, that's their fault.
So he began to resent them, which in his... he began to resent them, which his, by his criminal actions later, was very evident.
Right. Do you know how his relationship with his mother was?
I don't. It didn't really say. It just focused mostly on his father.
Mm-hmm.
So I would assume... Huh.
Couldn't have been that bad.
I don't know. I feel like back then it was, that's kind of how it was. Like, usually your dad was kind of a jerk and the mom just kind of went along with whatever. But I don't know that for sure. But it definitely didn't, like, mention anything about his mom. So I don't think she was nasty by any means. So in 1957, Hansen joined the U.S. Army, but was discharged after only a year of serving. His army career was pretty uneventful. It didn't seem that he was discharged for anything crazy or anything. I tried to look it up to see if there was a specific reason, but it didn't say that it was because he did anything crazy. But he later worked as an assistant drill instructor at a police academy in Pocahontas, Iowa.
Oh.
Hansen got married to his first wife in 1960. That same year, in December, Hansen was arrested for burning down a local school bus garage in Pocahontas.
Oh, okay.
Right. He was sentenced to 3 years for the crime, but only ended up serving 20 months. Hansen said that it was his hatred for school that was why he burned down this building.
How old was he when this... He was, like, almost 30, right? Oh, no. 20... He was born in 1939, right? So he was 19?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think so, if the math is...
And he's still mad.
Yeah. His wife filed for divorce while he was serving time for this crime. He was reportedly arrested for several petty crimes between this time and marrying his second wife, who he married in 1963, and her name was Darla... Henrichsen? I don't know if I'm saying that right, but that's how it's spelt. So he met Darla at the resort in Minnesota that his parents owned at the time. So they had sold the bakery after Hansen burned down that school bus garage. Because I think news got around that that was their kid and they were like, he sucks. Uh-oh.
Yeah, boycotting it anyway.
Yeah. So, terrifyingly, he and Darla had two children together, Christy and Johnny. Their names were mentioned in the documentary, which is why I included them here.
Okay.
According to his children, he loved that Hansen loved them very much and was a good father to them. Who knows when they were asked that? Who knows what kind of trauma could have contributed to having them say that? Or maybe he was. Right. That's not the first time you've heard that with their family, they're normal.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
So in 1967, he moved to Anchorage, Alaska with Darla. He was famed a local hunting champion. He set multiple records that were documented in the Pope and Young's Book of World Record Hunters. Noted those were removed after all the crazy shit he did.
Oh. Oh, yeah, if he was hunting people, then yeah, that was probably not a good thing to advertise.
Right.
Yikes.
So in that time, he also learned how to fly a plane, and he purchased his own, which was a Piper Super Cub, which is a small single-engine aircraft.
Oh, okay.
It was pretty common for people in Alaska to have planes, especially hunters, because to get a lot of certain game, you would have to fly out into, like, the crazy wilderness.
Yes.
A friend of Hansen... Go ahead.
When I was looking up, like, things about Alaska, like, just looking about up Alaska to start the research on this, it said that the population in Alaska, like, it actually has the most pilots per capita of any state. Like, that's the state that the most people have their pilot license.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I guess it's super common there.
Right. I mean, I can imagine it.
Mm-hmm.
So a friend of Hansen's reported that one time when a friend of his, so a friend of a friend, went out hunting with Hansen. And when this friend came back, he said the whole time he was out there, he was really uncomfortable with him. Like, just got weirdo vibes.
Hmm.
The friend said that, you know, him and his other friends really enjoyed hunting because they loved the outdoors, you know, loved the sport, loved everything that went into it, but Hansen seemed to love it solely for the kill. And it seemed like he only went hunting with him, like, one time and could already see that, so that's pretty terrifying.
Yeah.
So Robert's most more serious crimes began in the early 1970s. However, his very violent crimes weren't really noticed until the later 1970s, so it took him a while to be found out.
Okay.
Hansen proved to be very hard to track, especially because he targeted sex workers and then put these women through absolute hell when he flew them out into the Alaskan wilderness after torturing and raping them to hunt them down.
Oh my god.
So he...
What a monster!
Yeah, no, he took everything out of these women and then brought them out into the woods in the middle of nowhere and just kind of like
hunt them like animals.
Yeah, kind of just like fucked around with them, like fought back with them, and then when they would try to get away, he'd go after them.
That's
so nuts. Yeah, literal nightmares. So being out in the woods like that, he was very hard to track. It was very hard to figure out what he was doing. So, he mainly targeted sex workers, exotic dancers, and women in that type of work. He threatened them by telling them if they didn't cooperate with him, he'd get them in trouble for their, you know, for what they do.
Right.
It was usually women that fought him and resisted that ended up being his murder victims. He used to, like, I think I mentioned this later, but he would always kind of say, like, you know, if they didn't fight me and they did what I wanted, like, I would always was gonna just, you know, bring them back, return them home. But obviously, like, who's not gonna be terrified in fighting?
Yeah, right, exactly. They don't know if you're about to kill them.
Right. So, I call bullshit regardless, but...
Mm-hmm.
So, it really did take a while for anybody to catch on that they had a serial killer in Anchorage. In 1980, electrical workers discovered a woman who was never identified. Even, like, to this day, they still don't know who she is.
Mm.
But they called her Eklutna Annie because she was found near Eklutna Road, which was 28 miles north of Anchorage. So I guess, I mean, it makes sense if he had a plane, that's probably how far north he got.
Oh, yeah.
Or how he got that far. Hansen said, so in this documentary, it was playing tapes of Robert Hansen speaking, like the interview tapes. So, like, you could hear him saying some of this. And, like, some of the stuff he said in there, I, like, kind of wrote down because he would talk about certain cases.
So he admitted to everything?
I always get confused. It's at the end of my research, it did say, I think he admitted to 17. He did end up admitting to that many.
Okay.
So Hansen said about this unidentified woman that she was running. He caught up to her, quote, grabbed her by the hair or whatever, and pulled, and then he pulled out a big hunting knife. Oh, and then she pulled out a big hunting knife. She swung it at him, and that things just got out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
A knife ended up being her cause of death.
Right.
So I'm not positive if he ended up getting the knife from her. He uses a gun most of the time, so that would lead me to think that he ended up getting the gun from her and using it, but I'm not positive.
Okay.
So police were actually able to create a figure of what they believed Eklutna Annie looked like, but still to this day, nobody knows who she was. So back then it was, it said in the documentary that they had enough of her skull to be able to, and they literally made like a 3D figure of her face, but I still don't know who that poor woman is.
Yeah, that's sad. That means that nobody like tried to claim her either, mm-hmm. you know? Like no one.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. If they had the whole skull, it's like that really means nobody reported her, or because I feel like that would that's a lot of times how they identify people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because now they can even do a whole, like, based on your skull, they could probably put up a whole AI picture
of
what you look like. So I don't know, sad stuff.
So yeah, no, that's, it's terrible. Hopefully they'd still like look into that. I don't know if it ever became available. I know they have a ton of stuff to do, but
yeah,
it would be nice for her to just have a name.
Yeah, exactly.
So later that year, they also found Joanna Messina, who was found in a gravel pit, and Sherry Morrow, who was also a dancer, in September 1982, and Sherry had been deceased 10 months before authorities found her body in a shallow grave near the Knik River.
Wow.
I think a lot of these women were found near that river. So he had a specific area.
Like a that he would dispose almost.
Yeah, that he would dispose of these bodies.
Is he burying all of them, do you know?
I don't think so. I think they're just dumped. But again, it's just so out in the wilderness, you know, and I'm sure mm-hmm. there's snow, dirt, you know, like I don't think it's too hard to cover him up. But he was not, like, digging graves, no.
Oh, okay. So it's just kind of, like, covering them.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
So officers just happened to be out moose hunting. So it was actually, like, police officers that found Sherry's body. It took a month, so it took until October for her to be identified. Police ended up searching the area and found a shell casing for a bullet, and Sherry had a bullet wound right to her heart. Mm. When they spoke to Hansen about Sherry, he said that she was fighting him, she ran away, he caught her again, and then he shot her right in the chest. So on the Butcher Baker Mind of a Monster documentary, they spoke to a friend of Sherry. Which, if like, you need a good documentary to watch, I really, really would recommend this one. And I paid 50 cents to watch it.
On what?
I had to rent it on Amazon Prime.
Okay. Good to know.
But, again, it was, you got to hear the recordings of him talking to police. So, like, you got to hear some of him, the stuff him, you got to hear him saying the stuff he did.
Mm-hmm.
And they interviewed a lot of people, which I like to try to do the best I can. I like to try to watch something about whatever I'm covering and, you know, pull the words that people that were there say. So to try to, you know, relay the most truth I possibly can.
Right. Yeah, I like that too, where you can, like, listen straight from the mouth.
Yeah, so somebody who experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
So, on that documentary, they spoke to a friend of Sherry, whose friend is Susan. She was also a dancer at the same club. So this is a lot later.
Yeah.
So Susan had spoken to Hansen before Sherry did at this, you know, dance club. And Susan had gotten a weird vibe from him and denied going out on a date with him. But not long after that, I'm not sure if it was like a day later or a week later. I don't know. But I don't think it was too long. Sherry came up to Susan saying that she had a date with a guy who had an airplane. And Susan was like, oh, yeah, I know that guy. And Sherry asked if Susan would walk her to meet for the date with Hansen. So Susan did, told Sherry, who seemed very excited, that had this, you know, that she had this date and she had potential for it to turn into something and hopefully she could get out of, you know, the rougher life that she lived in.
Yeah, right.
So Susan told Sherry to have fun and, like, you know, waved to her, watched her walk away, and never saw her again.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
Especially to know it could have been her, too.
Uh-huh. Right, that, like, survivor's guilt.
Mm-hmm.
So, by now the police were noticing a pattern with what was happening to the sex workers, to sex workers in the area. About every month or two, there would be two or three sex workers missing in similar circumstances. In similar circumstances to how the others were taken slash found. So the officer, her name was Maxine Farrell. And I believe, I didn't write it down, but I believe when she began speaking, she was one of, like, two women in this, like, police force at this time. Because this was a while, you know, this was a while ago.
Right.
So that wasn't a super common thing. But she is, like, credited with, she was noticing what was happening with these, with the women, you know, whether they're dancers, sex workers, whatever. She was putting it together, and she was like, something weird is going on here, and I don't know what, but she didn't give up on it.
Oh, good.
So, she is the one, she is the woman in the police force at the time who can be credited with really diving into this. She believed there was something serious going on, and that there was a serial killer out there. She was doubted, of course, by other members of the police, but it ended up being Maxine was very right.
Right.
Hansen would bring some of these women out to a specific area that included this, like, barn-like thing that he called a meat shack that looked, it just abandoned and falling apart. Like, it looked like a falling apart old barn. But he made sure to note that it had a big metal bar hanging from the middle of it that was used to, like, hang moose, like, after you hunt them, you know, and you, like, hang them upside down and do whatever.
No.
So, like,
just moose?
It doesn't say he ever used it for the women, but, like, obviously just hearing that, that's all you can possibly think.
Yeah. Yikes.
And obviously that just adds, like, I'm sure somebody in there is, like, thinking that's exactly what's gonna happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it was ever, I mean, that would obviously be very evident on somebody's body if something like that happened. And I don't think there was anything ever like that. Again, right. I think he mostly just used a gun. Yeah.
These poor women, like, it just seems like they all died terrified.
Yeah. No, I can't even imagine.
Your life's not bad enough, and then you just die so afraid.
Right, right. You're trying to either make some money or just turn your life around and, you know, just got really unlucky with who they went out with this night.
Mm-hmm.
So he would tell these women, this is where we're going to spend today. Specifically, there was one time Hansen had a woman out there when another plane could be heard and seen flying over. So he handcuffed the woman inside the meat shack and he went outside, waved at the plane all friendly like, and then it dipped its wings and flew back down the river. So he was shitting his pants at this point. And I believe it had, in the documentary, it was him telling this story. So, like, you could hear him relaying this.
Yeah.
So this happened about a year after Sherry was murdered.
Okay.
That another woman was found in similar circumstances. Bullet wound to the heart, shell casing nearby. She was also found by people that were out hunting moose near the Knik River. And this woman's name, this is the same woman that was in the shack with the plane falling, flying over. Her name was Paula Golding, and she was 30 years old when this happened to her. So Hansen said that during that time, Paula was putting up a fight, slapping at him, yelling. He said that she began to run, and he picked up his rifle and shot her. Mm-hmm. So they interviewed a woman who had dated Hansen, and she had met him from an ad he had posted in the newspaper, just like a dating ad. She said it in the documentary, but I don't recall exactly what it said, but it was something like, I want a woman who will, put on jeans and, like, go have an adventure, is, like, something along the lines of what it said. So she shared a bit of the experience she had with Hansen. He did try to get her into his plane at one point, but fortunately it was too windy that day, so they went back to his house instead. They continued spending time together down in the basement, where all of Hansen's trophy animal heads were, and just a bunch of, taxidermy things and, like, rugs and...
lots of, real romantic stuff.
Yes. So at one point he asked this woman if she wanted to make love on the bear rug. Like, the bear, like, the, you know, when they have, like, a head and then it's just, like, the skin.
Yeah, bleh.
And she said no. And in the recording of Hansen, he was just kind of like, yep, no big deal. She said no. She was a nice lady, and I didn't try to force her.
What?
I know. So, I think I would have included that anyway, but it's very interesting that this woman said no, and again, it was his voice telling that story. He was just so casual, like, no, she was a nice girl. Like, I wasn't gonna...
Yeah, she's nice.
So,
jeez.
My guess would be because she wasn't a sex worker. I think what, like, really triggered him was obviously, like, the fighting, but if they want, if they were, like, expecting money, that's what made them horrible people to him, because that's all they want,
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, on June 13th, 1983, police got a call around 3 to 4 a.m. that a white female was running down 5th Ave naked and handcuffed. A man in a truck had found her and he had given her a ride to a motel, which is where police went to, and they found her there. Her name was Cindy Paulson and she was 17 years old at the time.
Oh, baby.
I know. She told police about how Hansen had drove by and pulled into a parking lot near where she had been standing on the street. Mm-hmm. He offered her money for a sexual favor, and she got into his car after agreeing. He immediately pulled a gun on her and handcuffed her. He told her if she made any fuss that he would kill her.
Oh, man.
So this part's pretty rough. And this is the part that really... is conflicting with how he took a woman on a date down to his basement. She said no, and he was like, oh yeah, no problem.
Okay.
So he took Cindy to his house and to his basement. He told Cindy that he wanted to have sex with her on the bear rug that was down there. So it was there that he, sexually assaulted her. Cindy said, and this was told in her voice, as well. Cindy said he wrapped a chain around her neck 4 times and handcuffed her.
Aww.
She was down there for 5 hours, and that entire time, all she was trying to do was think of how to escape.
So wait, she was handcuffed to the chains around her neck? Like, were they connected?
I don't think so. I think her hands were just handcuffed together.
Okay.
So Hansen told her that she was such a nice girl that he was going to take her away to his cabin, and they were going to spend the weekend together. He claimed that he would return Cindy after their weekend.
Yeah.
So they had gone to the airport, obviously, because you had to fly out of an airport to use a plane.
yes.
Which is wild that how many people he took on this, and, like, I guess most of them went kind of willingly.
Yeah.
At least for the plane part. So Cindy said at the airport, Hanson had to take a second to put his seat in the airplane so he could tie her up. And she took this split second. He had his back turn and ran.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And this, so I did listen to, Morbid covered this in 2019. And I did listen. I like to try to, like, if I can find a podcast of the story, I like to, like, listen to it a couple days before or a week before, whatever, just so I can hear the story. And I feel like it's a little bit easier to take notes.
Yeah.
If I kind of know the base of the story.
Good point.
So this little part, I recalled from hearing what they had covered. Maybe I said that a little. Oh, no. Okay, we're fine. So that's where Cindy ended up finding that man in the truck that took her away to the motel.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard from the other, from the other coverage, this case, that Hanson was seen by somebody in that airport running like a maniac that he is after this girl. And when he realized he had been seen, he just stopped and turned around and walked back to his plane.
He's like, nothing to see here.
Right. Like, God. So, back to when police had Cindy, they asked if she would go to the hospital for an exam. On their way there, they drove by Merrill Airfield, which is where Hanson had her, and she picked out his plane immediately. Police got the name of the owner of that plane, and it was, of course, Robert Hanson.
Right.
Police went to Hanson's house and took him in. They said he was very cooperative and looked like a very normal guy. Police went to Hanson's house, and everything was exactly how Cindy had described it, specifically the basement. Mm-hmm. However, they didn't find any physical evidence.
There was no physical evidence that she had been there?
I guess not. They wow. had a hard time. They go back again and end up finding stuff, but it's like, it's hard for them to find.
Mm-hmm.
So, at first, of course, they believed it maybe was Cindy's fault. And she had jumped the price on Hanson, and this was her revenge, I guess.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, you know. Right. That's it's just insane. Ridiculous. And because she was a sex worker, and they were just seen as pretty much nothing, it was dropped.
Yikes.
But, thankfully, again, some of these officers knew something was wrong. Knew something was up. So some of the officers had a feeling that there was way more to this, and that Hanson was guilty.
Mm-hmm.
They began searching for anything possible that had to do with Hanson, who already had a lengthy criminal record.
Right.
So they began digging back to Hanson's first crimes against women that happened in 1971, while Hanson was on bail and awaiting a trial date for his first abduction and attempted rape of a woman, Susan Heppard, a different woman's name, was on their radar. So he sexually assaulted this woman, Patricia Roberts, who was taken from Anchorage at gunpoint and taken to the Kenai Peninsula, which is 160 miles from Anchorage.
Wow.
And I wrote, this is fucking bullshit. Hanson said, and this again was in his words, Hanson said after he had taken her that he didn't know what to do with her. He said, if she was scared... Gentlemen, I can honestly say I was more scared.
Oh, okay.
Like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah. Scared of what?
Right, because you didn't know what to do with... Right, the woman you just took and, you know, assaulted, yeah. Like...
Ugh.
But he thankfully... No, this... Yeah, this guy is rough. Like, it's insane. And it just, again, to just hear him and, like, you can hear his stutter a little bit and, like, I don't know. Like, the hairs on my arms, like, yeah. Stood up when he was talking at one point and, like, the stutter came through and I was like, I don't know, there's something about hearing them and just right, so just calmly kind of telling it.
Yeah.
Thankfully, though, she was able to convince Hanson to bring her back to Anchorage, and when she went to police, she easily picked Hanson out as the man who abducted her. Hanson claimed she was a sex worker, and this was all about money. Okay. Mm-hmm. This part gets a little confusing, and I think it's mostly my fault because I didn't super understand what was going on. So, Let's see if we can get through this together. Okay. So Hansen was offered a deal for the first woman, and that if he pled a certain way, he'd get off easier with what he did to Patricia.
Mm-hmm.
So, does that make sense to you?
Yes. Yeah. So okay. He made a plea deal so he, if he admitted to one, he wouldn't get the same punishment for other ones.
Right. If they got him for the first one, he'd get off a lot easier for what he did to Patricia.
Yeah.
So on March 24th, 1972, Hansen was sentenced to 5 years in prison for assault with a deadly weapon on Susan Heppard. The charges brought against him for the Patricia Roberts case were dropped in return for a no contest plea.
What?
Yeah.
So it did Susan survive?
Yes. Okay, I believe so.
Was she the 17-year-old? I'm sorry. There's been
so many. I know. It's so much. No. So Susan was, I believe.
Patricia was the 17-year-old then, right?
No. Cindy. So this is back. This is some of his first people. So he had. This was like before he was taking sex workers, too.
Oh.
So that's kind of why this got. Attention, because it, you know, one was like a real estate agent, and I believe that was Susan.
Okay.
So Susan was like the first person he kind of, I don't know to an extent exactly what he did, but he at least like kidnapped her and probably assaulted her. So it's Susan's case that he got charged for and ended up getting nothing for what he did to Patricia because he cooperated with the first case.
Oh my God. That's insane.
Yeah. So, like I was just saying, they believe this is when Hansen started going for more vulnerable women who wouldn't even be looked into. And he said he could do things with them that he couldn't do with a good woman.
With a good woman.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. I know. So
gross.
Right. So now we're going back to 1983, which is when they found Cindy, who was the 17-year-old that they brought to the motel and talked to and who had escaped him. And police were sure that Hansen had something to do with Cindy. They're like, this guy has this terrible record of shit like this, and there's no way. And she's, you know, pointing him out. Like, what, you know?
Right.
He already had such a violent record already with women, and they just couldn't let that go. They gathered up what they had on Hansen and gave it over to the Alaska state troopers. Thankfully, doing that got the police onto Hansen. They really wanted to get into his house because they were sure they could find something incriminating. On October 27th, 1983, they called him in to be questioned about the murders, and at the same time were searching his house. So they called him in to get him out of his house. They went to his house to go search it. Yeah. They called Maxine, who was the woman who knew something was going on with the sex workers disappearing. And she was actually the one to go into Hansen's house specifically because she would be able to identify the jewelry of some of these missing girls. So she had really researched into them. And I think she had photos and, you know, I mean, this man's a hunter. You're assuming there's trophies, you know.
A trophy, yeah.
So, at Hansen's home, she was met by Darla, his wife.
Oh, I forgot and their about two children. Darla.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so, I forgot this whole time that he had a whole family. Oh, Darla.
Yeah. So the poor kids were just traumatized and hysterical by the police coming in there and obviously had no idea what was going on. He did. So I believe his family was, you know, in the house for a lot of it, but he did at one point like sent Darla and the kids to Europe. I don't even remember what it was for, but like he got them out of the house for a little bit, and I would assume that's when he was taking these women to his house.
Right.
So the police had been in the house for a few hours at this point, but they weren't having any luck finding anything. Meanwhile, at the questioning of Hansen, he was denying it all. He denied shooting anyone. He would never harm anyone. At this time, they couldn't get him to break, and he ended up asking for an attorney. So obviously they had to stop talking to him.
Yeah.
So by this point, they had searched the entire house and found nothing. They had one room left to search, though, which was the attic, and that is where they found Hansen's rifles, like, buried under the, insulation stuff that's up there.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the rifles was linked to the two women that they had found that were shot in the heart.
Okay.
So that was the two women found by the river, I think, Occlutna Annie and then Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
So just as they were about to leave, the officer pulled at some more insulation near the opening of the attic. So he literally was, like, ready to come down out of the attic, and he just pulled out a little bit of the insulation that was, like, right near the opening, and he found a bag of multiple jewelry items, which is exactly what they had come there to find. Nice. And they had no doubt after that they had their guy.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So, in October of 1983, Hansen was arrested. However, they still didn't have a super solid case. They had Cindy for a witness, but she was the only one. So police were looking closer to find anything that could incriminate Hansen. And when they were looking into stuff, you know, they were looking through all his stuff and whatever, they found an aviation map with pencil markings on them. And at first they weren't sure what to make of them, but then they came up with the idea, what if these are gravesite markings?
Right.
So they took the map and asked another officer where the first body was found, and the officer went, well, right here, but you've already got it marked on the map. The other officer was like, I didn't mark this map. Robert Hansen marked this map. So now, they're like, oh fuck, there's a lot of marks on this map.
Yeah.
And most of them they hadn't found.
Mm-hmm.
So, February 22nd, 1984, Robert Hansen finally confessed. He did up a lot of victim blaming, which we already knew.
Right. Yeah.
He claimed if the woman cooperated him, then his plan was to always return them, but if they fought, then, quote, they stayed. He told them about the cases they knew about, and then just said, that's it. But the investigator, well, you can tell I've been talking for a while, because I'm starting to, like, get all tripped up.
Right. Yep.
But the investigators pushed him. They said, we have a map with 21 X's on it, and there may be 21 victims out there. They began pointing to each X on the map, and he began telling the story of each woman. He wound up confessing to 17.
Oh, man.
On February 27th, 1984, Hansen is sentenced at the state courthouse of Anchorage for the murders of Sherry Morrow, Paula Golding, Occlutna Annie, and Joanna Messina, plus the kidnapping and rape of Cindy Paulson. Robert Hansen is sentenced to 461 years plus life.
Oh, wow. Plus life.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
So, using Hansen's map, seven more bodies were recovered by Alaska State Troopers throughout April and May of 1984. The remaining six victims Hansen confessed to killing have never been found.
Oh, wow.
So, I think that those numbers don't super match up, because I remember trying to, like, look back, and I was like, I thought there was 17, but they found seven more. Well, I guess maybe they just mean they found seven more bodies maybe that he did admit to. I don't know.
Yeah, in addition to the ones he got charged for.
Yeah.
And then six they couldn't figure out. Find.
Yeah, and then there was another six he confessed to, but they couldn't find. Which is interesting. Like, why wouldn't he have marked them on the map?
Right.
And I'm sure they checked every mark on that map, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Hansen rotted in jail until he died in 2014 in prison of natural causes at the age of 75. So unfortunately, he did get to live out most of his life, and these women didn't, but he's
gone now.
Gone now. Yeah.
Yikes. What a monster.
Yeah, no, he's terrible. And I did just want to Morbid did the same thing, and I didn't want to seem like I was copying them, but I also didn't feel like it would be right to tell the story without giving the names of all the women.
Oh, okay. Yeah, definitely.
So the women that are confirmed that were murdered by Robert Hansen are Sherry Morrow, Paula Golding, Sue Luna, Eklutna Annie, Andrea Altieri, Malai Larson, Sandra Patterson, Teresa Watson, Lisa Futrell, Tamara Peterson, Angela Federn, Dylan Sugar Frey, Tammy Bush, Mary, Phil, Megan, Emmerich, Cindy Paulson, and then the 17th name says another unnamed victim.
That's so many names.
I know. Yeah, that's a rough one, but
I'm glad I don't know. They caught him.
Yeah, that's what I think with this one, at least. Like, it, you know, obviously there was, and there usually is some type of doubt, and it takes the police a while to kind of catch up or take things seriously, but.
Especially back then, too, like you said, their vision of sex workers wasn't, not that it's any better now, but it's, at least people can go to the police, maybe, and feel better about it, but. I doubt that they even gave a shit at first, like you had said. They obviously didn't.
Right. So, I don't know. I like, telling these stories is, I almost, like, fight myself a little bit with, like, the reason telling these stories is important, if you know what I mean.
Yes. Yes.
Like, I don't want to share these stories for entertainment's sake, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's telling this story, one, to give these women, you know, a voice of what happened to them, and unfortunately some of them don't even have names, and to just kind of, I don't know, I guess put awareness out there that people are crazy, and like, just, you know, be aware of everything as best you possibly can, and, you know, stuff still unfortunately happens, but just to know that there are crazy people out there that will do crazy things.
Yeah. If a 17-year-old girl comes up to you handcuffed, saying that she was assaulted, maybe believe her.
Right. And you, I mean, you and I both know from a lot of stories we've heard that that's not the first time something like that has happened.
No.
Which is insane.
Yeah, it's sad. And still happens.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, hopefully.
Well,
I believe, you know, it's gotten a bit better, but hopefully that'll stop.
Yeah. Well, that was depressing.
Yeah, you're welcome. Sorry. But I don't know. There was, again, when I got into that research, I was like, damn, this is fucking rough. But, like, this guy is a monster. And it's just, it's unbelievable that people like that exist out in the world. And at least he did get charged. He got put away. He couldn't do this to anybody else. And now he's dead, so he definitely can't do it to anybody else.
Right. He's done, for sure.
So, do you want to lighten the mood a teeny bit and end with some Alaska fun facts that you found?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I came with Alaska facts today because I ended up looking up a lot of stuff about Alaska when I was doing my research for Bonnie. So I did come up with a couple things. So one thing I never thought about with Alaska, when I think Alaska, is volcanoes. And apparently they have a shit ton of volcanoes in Alaska. Really? Yeah. It says of all the volcano eruptions in the U.S. over the last 200 years, more than 75% of them have occurred in Alaska.
Why do you, so have it you has never like, heard that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Isn't it usually Hawaii that you hear?
Right, yeah, Hawaii is probably the big, I know there's one in Washington, but I can't even say that. I don't even know where it is. The U.S. Geological Survey has identified more than 130 volcanoes and volcanic fields active in Alaska, over the last 2 million years.
That's insane. I almost don't believe you.
I don't know. This is on a... let's see. What website are we on here? Royal Alaska... RoyalAlaskanMovers.com.
Hmm. I mean, I do believe you, but I don't, because I'm just like, there's just so much snow. Like, how are there volcanoes up there? That's wild. Yeah.
I guess not a ton of them are active.
Yeah, since that's fair.
The 1800s, there's only 40 that have been recorded to be active.
Okay. Well, yeah. I guess that makes more sense why it's not frequent.
Mm-hmm. It says most of the... volcanic activity occurs along the Aleutian Arc, which is the curved tail of the islands extending from southwest corner of Alaska. So they're mostly on the little arm there.
Weird.
Yeah. I think there was one other... Oh, my other fact was that more pilots live in Alaska than... than any other state.
All right. Well, that one came out a little early, but was proven true. Yeah. So
I'll give you one more. Apparently, they're really good at growing huge produce, like the kind you would see at like your state fair that win for like biggest pumpkin or biggest squash and things like that.
That's so random.
I know. A 138-pound cabbage, a 65-pound cantaloupe, an 83-pound rutabaga, and a 39-pound turnip. Every one of these is a world record piece of produce grown in Palmer, Alaska, in the Matanuska Valley, a location famous for its gigantic fruit and vegetable.
That's wild. I would not have guessed that either.
Yeah, it's they attribute it to long summer nights with as many as 20 hours of sunshine. Plus people taking care of the land. Yeah. So it probably really helps that they have the sun out for that long.
Damn. Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But that's wild. Huh. Look at Alaska. It's got lots of things. Some scary, some giant fruit.
Look at them go. So I guess we're going to close it up. I just want to remind everybody, if you have any headlines, personal stories, true crime cases, or fun facts you want to share, just you can DM us or email either of us at whathaveyoudonepod.com. Oh, whatehaveyoudonepod at gmail.com or whatehaveyoudonepod on Instagram.
Just so everybody knows, this is written out for her to say.
I know, and gmail.com isn't there.
Oh, it isn't?
So, didn't want to out you, but now that you said I was reading from something.
That's fine. Hold on. I gotta find it now.
Yeah, while she's looking, check us out. You can also check us out on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We're going to be putting episodes out every first and third Wednesday of the month. Listens and shares and readings, like always, also go a huge way. So if you haven't yet, give us a rating on Apple or Spotify. You know, it doesn't have to be 5 stars, but that would be amazing. And, yeah, tell us what you think. Next episode, we're going to be doing Michigan, some stories from Michigan. So if you have any stories about that or any info, fun facts, things like that, that we can share, just write on in.
You are right. The @gmail.com wasn't there.
Thank you.
But you still can't read, so.
I still can't read, so it would have happened eventually in there.
You know, right, well, this is a lot of typing, a lot of reading.
Yeah, a lot. But it was fun.
It was fun. Yeah, we've got a pretty lengthy episode this time.
I know.
Lots of editing to be done now.
Yay. Well, we'll talk to everyone later. Thanks for listening. Bye.
See ya.